This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 23rd, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 187 and happy Victoria Day weekend. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. The Cullen Commission. What's next in BC's money laundering public inquiry? And another casualty of Canada's one-dose summer. The national summer sport, lacrosse, will not award its national championship in 2021 because of the pandemic. I speak to the Western Lacrosse Association's president. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or is the worst-kept secret in British Columbia politics going to make a difference after finally making it official? This is part of what Kevin Falcon had to say about his political comeback during a May 17th Facebook Live event to announce his run for the BC Liberal leadership.
Last fall, they cynically called an election in the middle of a global pandemic, despite the fixed election dates brought in by BC Liberals to eliminate exactly this kind of politicking. And while COVID numbers were shooting up, the NDP were out in the campaign trail, needlessly putting British Columbians at risk. And recently, we faced some of the highest COVID numbers we've ever seen. And there's been zero transparency and zero accountability for the NDP's uneven at best handling of this crisis. As a former health minister and finance minister myself, I know that this pandemic isn't just a health problem or an economic problem. It's actually both. As we chart a course, a new course for the future, we must be honest in our assessment of what ails us. Our party, the BC Liberal Party. We've lost our way, and recent elections bear that out. We've lost voters from the center to the NDP, and voters from the right have sat at home. If we want to be relevant, we need to course correct and do so fast. And I believe that we need a return to principled politics, not transactional, short-term decision-making, but principles-driven, long-term solutions that clearly reflect who we are and what we believe in. That's the key to success for our party. When we stick to our principles, we win elections. The BC Liberal Party I know believes in talking honestly with the people we serve. No virtue signaling, just candor. So let's get back to principled leadership. There is no doubt in my mind that this party can and will emerge stronger than ever, but we have a lot of work to do. And that includes a root-to-branch rebuild that re-energizes our existing base of supporters while aggressively recruiting new, highly competent, diverse members and candidates. I believe that our renewal demands a new party name, one that will be decided upon in consultation with our own membership. And I want to be very, very clear about something. A BC Liberal Party under my leadership will welcome people of every background into our big tent. British Columbians of all races, sexualities, genders, socioeconomic background are going to be embraced and welcomed as part of the big BC Liberal Party. Because a party with a diversity of backgrounds is a better and stronger party, and there will be zero room for intolerance under a Kevin Falcon leadership.
Lots of questions about Falcon, the presumed frontrunner. He comes with experience, having served in Gordon Campbell's three governments and Christy Clark's first as Minister of Deregulation to cut red tape, later as Minister of Health, Minister of Transportation, and Minister of Finance. Evidence shows that Falcon was cheated out of his first try for the leadership in 2011 by Christy Clark campaign workers who used stolen PIN numbers. He also comes with baggage, and I hope to get him to clear the air about a variety of issues from the BC Liberal era. BC did a lot of business with SNC-Lavalin during his time in cabinet. The BC Rail privatization scandal and the Bazivirk settlement, that made it go away as well. Ongoing secrecy about the real costs of the 2010 Winter Olympics. the BC Place TELUS naming rights scandal, and the sale of provincial government real estate, including deals with party donors in the Tri-Cities and Surrey. Clearly, the NDP attack is focused on Falcon. The party fears his ability to organize, like he did in the late 1990s. They fear that lightning could strike twice. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Horgan'sThePremier.com or something like that. I believe the best way forward is to put the politics behind us. Well, I can tell you that I was on a website yesterday looking to see how easy it was to get a flight anywhere. And every time I put in Vancouver to anywhere, they said cannot sell. So this is not about BC. This is about the world. We're in a global pandemic.
Vancouver International Airport President Tamara Ruman.
Turkish Airlines is coming to YVR and had its inaugural flight from Istanbul to YVR. Istanbul is also a very important connecting hub for Iran and India, two markets that are, of course, essential to our region.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, Chinese Premier calls for increased coal production as prices skyrocket. China's shift in its energy policy and ban on Australian coal has caused coal prices to skyrocket, with the country's premier, Li Keqiang, announcing that the industry needs to produce more in order to offer more. Prices for commodities such as coal, steel, and non-ferrous metal have been on the rise, with coal up 94.5% from April 2020 and coking coal increasing by 106%. Most of China's coal is sourced locally, with the country producing 3.9 billion tons in 2020, which is 1.4% more year on year. China also imported 301 million tons of coal last year, the highest since 2014. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan replaced as host of Tokyo Olympics final baseball qualifier. Mexico will replace Taiwan as the host country for the upcoming final baseball qualifier of the Tokyo Olympics due to a surge in local COVID-19 cases in the East Asian country. The event was originally set to be held June 16th to 20th in Taichung. However, the pandemic situation in Mexico appears to be more severe than Taiwan, as it continues to register about 2,000 COVID-19 cases per day. Since most players on Team Taiwan have yet to be vaccinated against the disease, officials are evaluating the risk of traveling to the Latin American nation and are consulting with the players on their willingness to participate. In stuff.co.nz, private equity are all about themselves. Former investment bankers warning to New Zealand Rugby. Players in grassroots rugby will lose out if NZ Rugby signs a deal with a United States private equity giant, which will be solely focused on maximizing shareholder return, a former investment banker says. Silicon Valley private equity firm Silver Lake is offering NZ Rugby $387.5 million for a 12.5% share in a newly created NZ Rugby entity called Commercial LP, which would control NZ Rugby's commercial interests. NZ Rugby wants to sign off on the deal with Silver Lake and has the backing of 26 provincial unions, but is yet to get the support it needs from the Rugby Players Association. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Oregonians can go maskless outside, must show proof of vaccination to forego masks indoors, state says. The state is still recommending that people wear masks in crowds and large gatherings, especially if they are unvaccinated or at high risk for COVID-19. Oregon will still require all people, including those who have been fully vaccinated, to wear masks and maintain physical distance on public transportation and in schools, healthcare facilities, homeless shelters, long-term care homes, and correctional institutions. Businesses and venue operators that don't want to check vaccination cards or that want to maintain more restrictive policies will still be allowed to require masks at their discretion, according to the state. In the Seattle Times, Seattle-Alaska cruises to resume soon, boosting local economy. The resumption of sailing is made possible by the recent passage of the Alaska Tourism Restoration Act, which will allow cruise lines to bypass Canada, where cruise ships carrying more than 100 passengers are still banned. Princess Cruises, Holland America Line, and Carnival Cruise Line said they would restart cruising to Alaska for a partial season starting in July for passengers who have proof of vaccination. Before the pandemic shut down, the cruise industry was credited with a local economic impact of $900 million annually, contributing to the estimated 5,000 jobs, according to Visit Seattle. In Czech news, Port Angeles and MV Coho wait for border reopening. The Black Ball ferry line shuttles approximately 130,000 cars every year, which is the equivalent of about 470,000 people arriving in Victoria from Port Angeles, Washington, via the MV Coho ferry. The border between Canada and the U.S. has been shut since March 2020 to leisure travel. However, during the pandemic, the MV Coho ferry remains tied up in Port Angeles. Black Ball Ferry Line says the ship is only taken out for a run every 6 weeks to ensure it is still seaworthy. Washington State is on track to reopen on June 30th or earlier. In order to do so, it will need to hit its target of 70% fully vaccinated residents in order to lift COVID-19 restrictions. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The Cullen Commission is almost over. The witness testimony phase of British Columbia's public inquiry into money laundering ended on May 14th. Lawyers for all the participants get to deliver their closing statements from July 6th to July 8th. But could there be any surprises before then? During the May 14th hearing, Commission Counsel Brock Martland focused on two people. What I like to call the poster boy for the money laundering inquiry, accused loan shark Paul King Jin, and one of the key whistleblowers, former British Columbia Lottery Corporation anti-money laundering investigator Ross Alderson. We've heard a lot about Paul King Jin, and we've heard from his lawyer, Greg Del Biggio. Former BCLC anti-money laundering investigator Alderson has refused to testify. He originally wanted standing in 2019, but withdrew his application. It is believed that BCLC was not going to cover all of his legal costs. Here is Brock Martland.
I wanted to advise Mr. Commissioner that we have repeatedly offered some available hearing dates and a number of different dates to Mr. Jin, including if he wanted to have witnesses called, if he wanted to have witnesses recalled to cross-examine or further cross-examine them. Likewise, we have offered Mr. Jin, through his counsel, the opportunity to attend voluntarily and give evidence himself, and he has declined those offers that have been made. The final topic that I wanted to address, Mr. Commissioner, before we adjourn, at least until later in the day, has to do with Ross Alderson. You may recall, Mr. Commissioner, there's a previous overview report that has been entered in evidence relating to this witness, Mr. Alderson, who has not testified, Exhibit 573. Mr. Alderson is someone that the Commission has made repeated efforts to contact. He was under a summons. He had been interviewed by Commission Counsel. Commission Counsel fully expected that he would testify and be involved in these hearings. He left the country. He has not provided any means of us contacting him. Our Commission has made repeated efforts to contact him. We have not been able to contact him using the contact information that he provided before he left Canada. Recently, Mr. Alderson has contacted us in writing. He has sent a courier delivery using a hotel beach resort return address and phone number, which gives us no ability to actually contact him back. We've likewise made efforts, including efforts in Australia, to try to contact him, but to no avail. He has not provided any contact information for us to reach him. Mr. Alderson, to my understanding, seems to be following some of these proceedings. Likewise, there may be others who are able to contact him. And so I appreciate it's an unorthodox thing to do in a hearing, but we wanted to put on the record that if Mr. Alderson can please contact us. We reiterate our invitation that he provide us with contact information in order that we can properly address any question and the issue of him providing evidence to the commission.
But why the focus on Alderson when so many other big names were not pursued for testimony? Here's a partial list, a list that I would have asked. Gordon Campbell, the former premier. Patrick Kinsella, the former great Canadian casino lobbyist, political bagman, and BC Liberal campaign manager, and also a racehorse owner, Patrick Kinsella. He was not called. Ex-Vancouver Mayor Gregor Robertson, longtime Richmond Mayor Malcolm Brody. Those are the two municipalities that saw the most activity during the heyday of money laundering and real estate mushrooming. Great Canadian Casinos Director and Senator Larry Campbell. Yes, Canada has a senator who is also on the board of directors for a casino company. Developer Peter Wall, a dynamic developer of many high-rises in downtown Vancouver and also someone very politically active as a supporter of Gregor Robertson's Vision Vancouver and Gordon Campbell and Christy Clark's BC Liberals. Real estate marketer Bob Rennie, same thing. Bodog, online gambling and cryptocurrency tycoon Calvin Ayer. He began his empire here in Vancouver. And political strategist Mark Marison, who wants to run for mayor, the former husband of Christy Clark, who maintained a political relationship all along. To get to the bottom of the problem, all of them needed to be heard, but why were they not called? Former gambling and booze minister and BC Liberal Solicitor General Rich Coleman was recalled. We heard from him twice. We heard from him April 28th, but some of his testimony conflicted with CBC reports from 2011, so he was called back on May 14th.
To our last scheduled witness within these evidentiary hearings, as you will appreciate, Mr. Coleman testified on April 28th in the government response hearings. We've arranged to have him recalled for today to answer questions on a fairly specific area and span of time. He's in attendance with his counsel, Gavin Cameron, and Madam Registrar, if the witness could be sworn, please.
Mr. Coleman, please hold a Bible in your hand. Do you swear that the evidence you shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
And please state your full name and spell your first name and last name for the record.
Richard Thomas Coleman.
Please spell your first name and last name for the record.
Sure. Richard, R-I-C-H-A-R-D. Coleman is spelled C-O-L-E-M-A-N.
Thank you.
Brock Martland grilled Coleman about RCMP Inspector Barry Baxter, who was critical of casinos becoming hotbeds for crime way back in 2011. CBC found, after a Freedom of Information request, that in the spring and summer of 2010, right after the Winter Olympics, BC Lottery Corporation saw a spike in dirty money at casinos, but police were not immediately informed. For instance, there was $8 million in 90 large transactions over a three-month period. There was one case of $1.2 million at the Starlight Casino and another case of $460,000 at River Rock. The latter involved $20 bills.
Seems to be you to the public saying, questioning the accuracy of Inspector Baxter, at that point the head of the Integrated Proceeds of Crime Unit, and the statements that he's made about what's occurring in casinos.
Yeah, and I was disagreeing with him, and I did disagree with portions of it, which I said there. And the reason being is, you know, the comments about something say, this stinks, there's no doubt about it, that it's dirty money, a common person would say it stinks, those sort of things. The reality is, my information was, there were people who actually played in casinos who had large cash transactions that were known to be legitimate. And so I felt his comments were broader and capturing every large cash transaction as being illegal and stink. And I thought that was incorrect.
I mean, he's to trace it back to what the reports were about, this business of what one person walking into a casino with almost $500,000, $460,000 in $20 bills, and that none of that generates a report that it's suspicious.
Well, my understanding of that, and I said that my understanding of that feedback from through my people with the lottery corporations, that was a known customer. And that person, that's why they weren't suspicious. And they didn't have suspicion about that particular customer. And that's why I said that.
But the person might not be suspicious, but his cash could be. Do you agree with that?
Well, my understanding is they would check people out and where their sources of income were or whatever. That deep level of detail wasn't given to me. The level of detail I was given is this was not a suspicious transaction to them because they had done their homework.
Okay.
Commission Counsel Brock Martland also asked Rich Coleman about turning down requests for interviews.
The date of the CBC radio interview is January the 10th. Do you have a memory today about declining requests for media interviews, CBC, Vancouver Sun, or others that week?
I don't. And my media would usually be managed by what's my schedule like and by my staff with regards to my availability.
Okay.
So it's not a case of declining so much as it, but does it fit in or do we have the time or what's the subject? Because you have to continue to do your daily work. So I was always available to media. But most requests for interviews with me would come through my office, through my communications person.
Okay.
I wonder if that could be called perjury, because I'm not the only reporter who was told during Coleman's career that he was unavailable for an interview. Unavailable every time I asked. I was also there in 2010 for a news conference about the launch of the PlayNow online gambling website when Rich Coleman left behind a curtain instead of taking any questions from reporters. So much for availability. Rich Coleman also took questions from his lawyer, Gavin Cameron, before the proceedings wrapped up.
In your opinion, would you consider the statements you made in this article on January the 8th to be downplaying concerns or attempting to sweep Inspector Baxter under the rug and out of the way?
No, I think it was clearly telling people that we were prepared to do whatever it took to continue to get better at how we managed gaming in British Columbia.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cameron. And thank you, Mr. Coleman, for returning to deal with the outstanding matters. You're excused now. And Mr. Martland, I think we are now in a position to adjourn to, I think, July 6th for oral submissions. Is that correct?
Commissioner, we have 3 days set aside for closing submissions, and that's the 6th, 7th, 8th of July. And at this point, we can adjourn to the start of that block. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We will adjourn.
The hearing is now adjourned until July 6, 2021 at 9:30 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you.
The NDP cabinet wants Cullen's report before Christmas, and the cabinet is evidently not interested in spending any more money to let Commissioner Cullen hear from everyone who knows what happened and when it did. Meanwhile, the NDP government installed former Port Coquitlam Mayor Greg Moore as chair of BC Lottery Corporation on May 21st, a week after Coleman's testimony. Moore is also the CEO of a real estate development company with Chinese backers. The box won't rock for another summer. Western Lacrosse Association in British Columbia and Major Series Lacrosse in Ontario jointly announced on May 18th that their 2021 seasons are cancelled by the coronavirus pandemic. The vaccine rollout in Canada's lacrosse hotbeds is too slow to invite crowds back to arenas this summer. That means there will be no Man Cup National Senior Men's Championship for the second straight year. This is WLA President Paul Del Monte.
The guidelines are what they are in British Columbia and in our country. We'll abide by them. We'll respect them. We'll support the efforts to put an end to the pandemic, but we'll do everything we can to keep lacrosse top of mind. We have a loyal, passionate fan base. We believe they're going to come back, and we're going to use 2 years of adversity to springboard to what we think will be an excellent 2022 and getting back to Man Cup competition.
Paul Del Monte said that he had no complaints dealing with provincial officials in British Columbia.
And, you know, our premier is a season ticket holder for the Shamrocks. He's a huge lacrosse fan. I'm sure there's no one else that would want to see lacrosse back as much as him. at the end of the day, there are important things that we have to deal with as a society.
Del Monte said a bubble or pod system of isolated games with no fans in the stands would not have been economically feasible.
And, you know, so webcasting is certainly a part of, you know, our revenue strategy. Yeah, and we count on that for what would be a normal season of 63 regular season games. So that's an important component. You know, we are indeed a community grassroots level sport that has the support of a very large, passionate fan base. But we do also rely on those ticket sales to drive our revenues and to support our teams. And when you factor in on top of that, a lot of our sponsorship is local and regionally based, and those businesses themselves have been hurting and suffering as a result of the pandemic. And it's unreasonable, if not unfair, of us to go knocking on doors for sponsorship support when these businesses themselves have experienced hardship. So, you know, at the end of the day, the only logical decision, as regrettable and unfortunate as it was to cancel the season. My final comment here is that we, you know, I have worked very closely with our counterparts in Major Series Lacrosse. Doug Louie, who's the commissioner of that league, he and I have probably chatted a couple times a week for the past several months to try to monitor situations and understand whether or not we could or could not play. As the host of the Man Cup this year, which was the MSL's responsibility, you know, they need to be able to ensure that they can fill an arena. They've got bills to pay, expenses to pay, and hosting a national championship that's a best of seven series, and they use it as a revenue generator, as we would when it's our turn to host in alternating years. So unfortunate, but, you know, we spent a ton of time thinking about our decisions, making the decision, labored over it. Our teams want to play. Our players wanted to play. At the end of the day, we were really left, unfortunately, with no options.
Watch WLALacrosse.com for more information about the 2022 season in the months to come. That's the sound of the YVR Pop Choir, also known as the Chorus Studio, with its topical take on Dolly Parton's Maxine, called Vaccine. You can find it on YouTube.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to everybody who works in British Columbia's tourism industry. Before the pandemic, it employed 150,000 people and generated $22 billion revenue a year. It is Tourism Week in BC from May 23rd to 30th. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
Those are the sounds of country music legend and actress Dolly Parton on Twitter. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 23rd, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on May 23rd in 2013, the 1955-built I-5 freeway bridge over the Skagit River collapsed in Mount Vernon, Washington. Three people were rescued. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.